Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm Christy Strasser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. President Donald Trump announced a ceasefire deal with Iran, and there were questions, mostly centered on what's in the deal and how it will affect us in the U.S. So here are answers, starting with KCBS in the Bay Area.
KCBS political analyst Mark Sandolo. Mark, good morning. As tenuous as this may be, I suppose it's good news, right?
It is, depending on which version of it, of course, you believe. You know, there is, from the White House pitches this as an end to the war. I think what's been released so far looks like it might be a pause in the fighting, which, of course, would be a good thing. And the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz, which would be a great thing, which means that, oil can flow. Gas prices come down. All of that's good. But what's not clear is, I mean, remember that the Strait was wide open before the U.S. began this war. So it's not as if the U.S. has accomplished anything if all it does is get back to the status quo. The goal behind this was always to end Iran's nuclear capabilities and ambitions. And already there's some disagreement that's emerging. What the U.S. is saying is that we're basically there and we're going to sign this deal on Friday. We just have to clean up a few details about the nuclear future. And as soon as they make a deal, we release a bunch of money that we have, billions and billions of dollars in confiscated Iranian money. Iran says, no, we're going to sign this deal on Friday. You're going to release the money. And once you release the money, we can start to discuss the nuclear future. Those are big, big differences. And yes, it's good news. The fighting is stopped. What's not clear is whether the war is over.
Yeah, I mean, I've been monitoring reaction to this, and there seems to be two camps. One side is, yay, we have a ceasefire. The other side is like, so what have we accomplished, and tell us why we started this to begin with?
Right. And I mean, you can certainly make the argument, as the White House does, that Iran's military capability is weakened. I mean, the president says it's gone, obliterated. Clearly, that is not the case, or they wouldn't still be fighting back. But certainly it's been, diminished, and their ability to sponsor state terror, their ability to sponsor groups that have gone for and pushed the destruction of Israel is diminished. And in that sense, I think, Trump can say we've achieved something. But opening the Strait of Hormuz, I mean, again, this was something that was not an issue until the United States and Israel began this war. So it's a little unclear what has been accomplished. The people who were saying that the White House has won a big victory at this point, it may be the case, but they're going on faith. They are assuming that there is more to this than has been released, and that the president actually has Iran very close to buckling. And normally, if the president of the United States says that that's the case, you believe him. This president does not have a good track record of saying things that are actually factually correct.
Jonathan Savage has the latest.
We don't have full details of the interim agreement. Mediators Pakistan say it'll be signed in Switzerland on Friday. Congratulations to all, wrote President Trump on social media, adding that he's immediately removing the US blockade of Iranian ports. Iran says it will implement the deal only when it's signed. The memorandum of understanding will be followed by 60 days of talks on Iran's nuclear program. The Pakistani government says the framework agreement includes ending Israel's military operation in Lebanon, but Israel insists it won't withdraw from land it seized. Jonathan Savage, Fox News.
Okay, well, we're keeping an eye on that for any new information.
How will a ceasefire, or even just a pause in the fighting, affect prices here in the U.S.? Here's Tommy Tucker at WWL in New Orleans.
Jason Shields, Chief Operating Officer, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Company. Morning. Let's talk about the potential peace deal and impacts that could have on the market, gas prices, et cetera.
Yeah, so exciting time over the weekend, right? We hear that there's the framework for a peace deal coming. Okay, if peace is coming, when does gas get cheaper? What do we do with the stock market? And what should we be doing, right? And so the oil prices move on headlines. gas moves through the system and stocks move on more than just peace. And so that I'll just kind of step through that framework as we talk about that this morning. So
say it again, Jason, what you just said.
Yeah, so oil prices move on headlines, gas prices move through the system, meaning it takes a little while for those to come down, and stocks move on more than just peace, right? So while peace is good for stocks, I'll kind of peel back a couple other things that we may want to look at before we just go throwing all of our money in the market this morning because there's a peace deal coming.
Right.
And the things that we've seen this morning so far are looking great. Oil's down about 5%. WTI crude, right, $80, about $80 a barrel. The futures, right? That's more importantly what you look at. The futures are in the 70s. So that's basically saying, hey, this, we're pricing the future purchases of oil, saying that we expect this price to go down over the next several months. And then the RBOB gas futures, nobody needs to know what RBOB is, but that's basically an index that tracks refined fuel that's available for us, is down 3.4% this morning. That's the one we actually care about, right? Because that's, oil is fine, but you have to refine oil to get gas. So RBOB actually tracks that, what that refined gasoline product is doing. And so the question everyone asks is, why does oil move so fast before gasoline does, mm-hmm. right? And oil is traded on expectations, Tommy, right? It is a commodity. It moves as such. But gasoline is a physical product that has to work through the system. And so it's really easy for oil to react to a headline. But the reality is that gasoline is different, right? Gas is a product, in essence. It's already sitting in those underground tanks that the gas stations have or in the supply chain in some way. Most people already paid for that oil at whatever that price was, and they paid for that gas at whatever that price was. So what you'll see is before it ever gets to your car, crude oil has to be shipped, refined, transported, distributed. There's a whole plethora of things that it goes through. And so that's why while that oil number is going to move really quick for us, stations may start working through that higher cost inventory over the next several days. And so the other thing you have is the refiners may be catching up, right? We're about to have a huge flood of oil get put back, turned back on now that the Strait's going to open back up. And so you only have so much refining capacity. And so you can produce tons of oil. But you have to get those refineries back on as well. So it's one of those things that takes a little bit of time to kind of work its way through the system. Oil moves in minutes. Gas moves in weeks, right? So when can people feel it at the pump? All right, I think that's the question we all want to know this morning. So if crude continues to stay low and this deal holds, which we all hope that it does, then you'll start seeing it over the next couple of weeks, right? Mm-hmm. I would not expect them to collapse overnight. You'll probably see, you know, 3%, 4%, 5%, but that normalization is going to happen over the next couple of weeks. Now, really, you know, the AC reported over the weekend, energy experts expect this to take a couple of months to really fully normalize. And that makes sense. Remember I talked about those oil futures are in the 70s. Mm-hmm. So what that means is as that works through the pipeline, you'll start seeing those prices go down even more. And that's really good, right? Getting oil in the 70s, I mean, that sweet spot's the 60s, Tommy, right? That's really where you want it to be. Mm-hmm. I don't expect that. The futures aren't telling us that. That's when you start getting into those low $3 gallons, possibly even kissing the twos. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the last time we've seen that.
Hey, y'all. I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one. So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast.
Reality Gaze, let's love!
So consumers will benefit as it turns into lower gas. Airline, trucking, shipping, delivering companies, everybody uses gas, right? And so what you're going to start seeing, this is the big macro part of it, is all of those things that went up because of fuel surcharges, whatever it was, right? Moving goods. Hopefully that's going to start working its way through the system over the next couple of months. We've talked about this, Tommy. There's been a lot of inflationary pressure. Mm-hmm. It's not just energy prices. It's actually the price of those products that you and I buy, which are impacted by energy prices. And so as long as this stays sustained, we'll actually see some relief in everything that we do. It'll take a few months, but we'll get there. So kind of pivoting to the stock market, because I got a lot of questions about that one over the weekend. Hey, peace deal. Should I go throw a whole bunch of money in the market? And you and I have talked about this a lot, Tommy. You should never chase a headline, mm-hmm. right? a smart investment strategy. And look, not investment advice, but everyone should have their own plan. You know, I always use the Ron Popeil-Levin methodology where I say set it and forget it. It's dollar cost averaging is what we call it. Right? Mm-hmm. So if you put $100 in and the market's down, that's great. If you put $100 in and the market's up, that's great too, because over time you reap the benefits. And history has shown, doesn't matter how smart you are, if you just invest the money and forget about it going in there, you reap the benefits of that market going up over time, right? Historically, it's always done well. And so another thing I kind of like to tell people is, here's some interesting numbers for everyone. Since the war has started, the NASDAQ is up 15% and the S&P is up 8%. So let that one sink in for a minute, Tommy. If you're thinking, okay, the war is over and we're going to have this explosion of increase in stock value, it's not actually what's going to happen. We've been increasing at a steady height since the war had started. And that's a really good thing. But I like to tell everybody that, because there were plenty of people over the weekend who thought, wow, this is great, I'm going to put all my money in the market. You chase that headline, it's probably already reacted. Now, the market has reacted slightly good this morning. S&P is up about 1.3 in futures when I looked this morning. Dow's up about 2%. So it will be a good day in the market, pending anything else going on. But, you know, look, peace can spark a rally, but it doesn't make the market risk-free, right? So those things that we talked about, you know, before, that inflation is still a thing, right? We're still trying to battle that. And so the market doesn't just look at whether or not there's peace. It also looks at whether or not the economy as a whole is doing good. And I found an interesting stat over the week. RBC looked at 20 major post-World War II military conflicts and the resolution of them and what that did in the market. And so on average, in 19 of those 20 events, any reaction that the market had immediately following that event, within 28 days, they fell back to the average. So if anything, I would encourage everyone to stick to their investing discipline. If you already have investments going in on a regular basis, don't do it. But don't increase it this week, because according to this RBC report, history has shown it'll go up on the headline and then it'll normalize itself back down after the fact. So again, just something for everyone to think about, just sticking to their discipline when it comes to investment.
Did the U.S. get what it wanted out of the deal? Here's Chad Hartman at WCCO with Dean Phillips.
I would love this to be a tremendous deal for our country. The strait can't just be opened up. We can't go back to status quo and view that as a victory. We need to have benefit from the strait. We need to have someone we can interact with, we can work with. And there has to be a great diminishing of their nuclear capability. But I'm sorry. Go ahead. By the way, save the TDS tax. Come on. Come up with something better. The fact that this was announced on the president's birthday and he's arriving at the G7, the timing, I'm sorry, sir, I'm a little dubious of the time.
As we all should be, Chad. This is, you know, in conversations with my colleagues who remain in Congress, both sides of the aisle, most are dumbfounded. No information has been shared. I'm not even sure that our Secretary of Defense and others who should be in the loop are in the loop. And frankly, based on what has been released, even if it's true, it seems to be, if anything, status quo, perhaps even regression from the 2015 JCPOA that President Trump demeaned for so many years and eventually ripped up. So this is, I think this is an embarrassment, sadly, for the United States and the West. There's no other way to look at it.
J.D. Vance, the vice president, was on a number of morning shows today. And when he was asked about the money reports, because there are certain reports suggesting that somehow Iran might right away get $24 billion and could be in line for $300 billion, which would be, I mean, indefensible, impossible to fathom, that he really didn't push away, Dean. He said they will be offered incentives in working with other countries in the Middle East to rebuild their country, to work with other countries. And it's a bit of a carrot and stick sort of situation where if they show stability, they show the end of their nuclear capability, then significant money is available. But if not, that money is not there. Conceptually, does that make sense to you?
Well, it makes sense if you're dealing with a 14-year-old kid in your household to inspire them to make his or her bed, for God's sakes. It does not work with a regime that has shown time and time again to take such deals and completely violate the terms. And all you have to do is look back at what our president said on day one, which is this is an initiative to not reduce or set back, but to eliminate the threat of a nuclear weapon by Iran and to affect regime change. Neither of those have been remotely accomplished. If anything, this regime is probably more emboldened to protect itself in light of the decapitation effort, which means even more intentional pursuit of some type of nuclear deterrent. And not only did we not destroy their military-industrial complex, it's clear from the last number of weeks, Chad, that despite tens of thousands of strikes, their ability to close the Strait of Hormuz, to cause havoc in Gulf states and even on U.S. bases remains in place. So, you know, the sad truth is this. It would have taken boots on the ground, American soldiers occupying Iran, if our intention was to prevent a nuclear weapon and affect regime change. That's the truth. And I do not fault American presidents for taking a great pause before putting our boots on the ground. And I don't think any American wanted to see that. But that is indeed the only way that those objectives could have been accomplished. I think our strategy was misguided.
Well, Dean Phillips is here, former 3rd District Congressman, a man who's been on the show dozens and dozens of times. We have Colonel David Hunt on a regular basis. He served our country for 30 years. Certain sides criticize others. And he made that exact point with us last week. And said, for us to really achieve notable success, I mean, he flat out said we would have to send tens of thousands of troops on the ground in Iran. That if we've made this decision to actually achieve what we need to achieve. Now, I see no scenario where that happens. But if enough skilled military people made that point, and so for us to truly get out the enriched uranium and to set them back decade after decade after decade. But we would have to send in 20, 30,000 troops.
Now, Chad, that you know, the truth is, I, as a Gold Star son myself, I lost my father in the Vietnam War. He was only 26 years old, served his country in a misguided and horrific strategic blunder by the United States in Vietnam. Vietnam was never, ever a threat to the United States of America or the Western world. They wanted independence. Iran is a threat to the world, not just the Middle East, to the entire world. They've shown how just by closing the Strait of Hormuz, how it affects American lives day to day, especially those with the least amount of resources. So at least when that question is posed, I would have to say it would have been a better use of military assets and potentially American lives. But if I were the president of the United States, would I have sent in tens of thousands of American troops into Iran under these conditions? No.
When it comes to money, the SpaceX IPO and the Iran ceasefire are the things everyone is watching. Here's Vanita Socker at WCCO in Minneapolis with more.
Elizabeth Schulze from ABC News. Okay, let's start off with the SpaceX IPO. Wow. Yeah. Elon Musk becoming the world's first trillionaire. And then I was sharing a story earlier this morning about a guy, a welder, an example. Mm-hmm. He had gotten some stock for $10,000 worth of stock 10 years ago. Now it's a million. You know, that's great. Those stories are good.
Amazing. No, and this is a big, you know, this is a huge success story when you're thinking about this company going public, a really widely seen on Wall Street as a blockbuster IPO. You know, SpaceX is up again today. It's up 6%. And this is after it soared about 19% in its opening trades on Friday. So we're looking at a company now that is valued at $2.3 trillion almost, which is just remarkable, Vanita, when you think about that. That's almost, you know, closing in on the size of Amazon. And this is, you know, this was private for so many years. All of a sudden it goes public. So those employees who work there, from the cafeteria workers to the welders who own shares, become millionaires overnight. And then, of course, you've got Elon Musk, the founder of SpaceX, becoming a trillionaire worth $1.1 trillion, probably more than that after this stock move today, according to Forbes. I mean, that is 12 zeros after as well. Just a mind-blowing amount of money.
I can't even. It's just staggering. That amount of wealth. I don't even know what you would do with all that money. It's crazy.
Good question.
Yeah.
I don't know if many people will ever know, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's very true. So this whole Iran deal is also having an impact right now on stocks.
Yeah, and actually we just hit a record high on the Dow because we're seeing a big move higher in stocks and also a drop in the price of oil. The market has been wanting to see a deal. They have been waiting, you know, traders have been waiting for progress from both sides. And because both the U.S. and Iran announced that this deal had been reached and that the Strait of Hormuz, that critical shipping lane, is expected to open up on Friday, according to President Trump, that's really kind of a bullish sign for the market here. The whole hope had been to at least get things back to somewhat closer to where they were before the war, when you had 20 million barrels of oil going through the strait every day. You know, a lot of that oil has still been just sitting on tankers stuck there. So the hope, and really kind of what's going to matter now looking ahead when you think about oil and gas prices too, is how quickly can those ships start moving? Because it's one thing to say we have a deal, this is going to happen. It's another thing to actually see those tankers start moving through the strait and getting to their destinations and getting oil moving around the world again. If that does start to happen, we're probably going to see gas prices go down a bit more. But if that doesn't, we could, you know, see prices stay at this level, even go a bit higher as the summer months go on here.
Certainly has an impact. You know, I'm sure it does where you are as well. With this deal, does this impact the federal interest, the Fed's interest rate decision this week?
That's such a good point, because we've got the Fed kind of looking ahead and saying, how is this going to shake out when you look at overall inflation? Because we've seen higher gas and energy prices translating into higher inflation so far. But if those prices do come down and you've got oil now at the lowest level since March, maybe that inflation won't be as, you know, as economists say, sticky, and it will kind of fade, which could put the Fed a little bit closer to cutting rates, but that's really not what they are at, what it's looking like right now. You know, the expectation is this week we have interest rates on hold, you know, those borrowing costs, the mortgage, the credit card rates, car loans probably going to stay where they are for a while as the Fed is in wait and see mode, sees if oil prices do kind of stay steady and go a bit lower. And if that translates to inflation maybe coming back down, because right now you've got inflation at a 3-year high. That's not typically when you would see the Federal Reserve lowering interest rates. Some might even say the Fed would have a case to hike interest rates right now.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Berry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B minus or a C plus life, because when you're living a B or B plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.